This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
Hello again, everybody out there at TFMR. It's Thursday. It's noon Eastern. So you know what that means, don't you? That means it's time for Access to Access, our award-winning, Pulitzer Prize-winning webinar series. You don't really believe that, do you, David? Dude, I just throw that stuff in there. At Grammy award-winning webinar series. Anyway, we have these every week for subscribers, giving everybody the chance to interact and pose questions directly of the guest. Said guest today is a return visit of our buddy David Morgan, who is a recognized, globally recognized silver expert, but commodity expert, miner expert. And it's great to have him in when he, you know, we probably talk maybe once a year, or maybe a couple times a year for these webinars, just because of the ever-changing situation in our industry. So David stays on top of everything through the Morgan Report, which is his subscription service. He's also, if you've never read his book that he wrote called The Silver Manifesto, I would encourage you to check that out as well. But anyway, David, thank you so much for coming back on for another A to A.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, before we even get started, tell everybody about the Morgan Report and your services and what you provide. Would you do that, please?
Sure. There's really only one Morgan Report, but the free e-letter is under the moniker of the Morgan Report. So there's really two primary services. One's a free e-letter that you can just get by going to themorganreport.com, give me a first name and an email address, verify you're not a robot, you're on the free list. As far as the subscription service, there's basically two. There's a premium service and there is a mastermind service. The premium service is the monthly letter, which is electronic only. Usually it runs about 18 pages. And then on top of that, there is a couple things that we do that no one else in the industry does. One is we have an alert service, which is a web application that you can put on your computer that will alert you anytime we do an update or a trade alert. You also get to look over my shoulder on any trades I'm making. In fact, I've got one outstanding right now that's yet to be triggered on silver. And the second feature is that we have guaranteed questions to me or the staff that we guarantee you an answer. So I don't know of any other newsletter service that will absolutely guarantee you an answer. That was one thing I really wished I had early on when I was very young in this industry and used to subscribe to a lot of different newsletters. I thought, geez, if they'd only answer my question. So we guarantee that. And lastly, we're one of the few, if not only, that when we do one of these junior mining exploration type of companies, we take a camera with us and basically let you sit with us as we tour the property, interview the geologist, the CEO, or whomever is actually conducting the analyst tour. So there's a lot of features there for $500. Nobody else in the industry provides what we do for $500 a year, as far as I know, with, you know, the web application, the alert service, the look over my shoulder trading platform, and the, you know, go on a tour with us type of thing. So we're pretty focused on what we can provide for the, you know, the paid members. And Mastermind gets all of that. And then they also get a once a month forum with the other Mastermind members. Usually that's a guest that's pretty top notch, Mike Maloney, Eric Sprott, somebody like that. You've been on there. And the advantage is one that you get to participate in the call. So if you want to ask a question of the guest, you can, which not too many people get a direct access to, let's say, you know, John Emery or whatever. And occasionally we will feature perhaps a CEO from a company that we like that has an opportunity to get in very early on a startup situation. We've done that with limited success. The last one we did has been phenomenal and continues to be so, but they don't always work out that way. But everybody that's at the mastermind level is pretty sophisticated investor. They've usually been seasoned. They know that not everything goes up, and it's worked out very well for everyone.
Well, and to that end, we're going to have some questions today for you to answer. I've got, we use this GoToWebinar platform so that everybody listening can submit their own questions. I've got five already in queue. And anybody that wants to get in line, type in your question. Do you quick quick, you click the questions tab in your GoToWebinar control panel, you type it in, and we will get to it eventually. To begin with, though, I've got four questions that were emailed to me by folks that couldn't join us live, but I've got my own question first, because, and it's my site, so gosh darn it, I get to ask it first, right? All right, so I just want to generally get your opinion on, I guess, basically one of my central tenets for this year and next, David. Today's performance in the metals and the shares notwithstanding, I see a kind of a bigger picture where 2018 reminds me a lot of 2010. And everybody was worried in 2010, you know, that if the Fed did more QE, there was going to be hyperinflation. But the Fed told us there wasn't going to be more QE. And metals kind of went sideways for the first half of 2010. But once they announced QE2, then all of a sudden, all of the commodities took off. And gold, you know, silver, we all know, went from 18 to 48. Gold went from 1300 to 1900. And then we all know what has happened since. But here we are now in 2018. And I sense it's a similar situation. The Feds, all the central banks are talking about tightening and drawing down their balance sheet and all this kind of jazz, when it's hard to see where that's going to be. They're going to be able to do that without impacting the broad economy and the debt service of the U.S., all that kind of stuff. So for me, David, I see a period here over the next 18 to 24 months of a declining dollar. The central banks having to get back into action, printing fiat to pay for all this debt, and the metals and the miners kind of awakening to that again, just as they did in 2010. So is that a question or is that a statement? I don't know, but I want to see what if that kind of, if you concur with that general sentiment.
I do. I think that we're starting a third leg up, which will be the biggest leg, the most exuberant. It will probably be compressed in time, meaning we may go, you know, 2 or 3 years. And I think it'll look parabolic near the end. The only caveat I'll say is that what you stated is totally accurate. The rest is opinion. What does the future hold? In the 2010 move from 18 to 48, we caught that on my service. Remember, I show you my trade. So I got in, I showed everybody exactly how I did it and why at 19. And I kept it, that long silver position, to 26. So, you know, you can figure out the leverage on that one. At 26, I took the money. And then QE2 was announced, and I got back in at 26. So basically, I just maintained the position and held it all the way up to 48 and exited basically a couple days before the exact tippy top. And I have many very happy subscribers and a few internet guys that you would know that basically retired on that trade. Anyway, what happened there needs to be explained from the aspect that when QE2 was announced, myself included, most thought that there would be inflation that would hit Main Street, not only Wall Street. And this got more or less a feeding frenzy going into the metals, particularly in the silver market. But what actually occurred was that all of that QE went to the banks only. None of it, really, for all practical purposes, none of it went into the pockets of Main Street. And so that's something I think we need to bear in mind. As an Austrian, you know, the definition of inflation is an increase in the money supply. It doesn't say that the money supply has to go any particular place. It's just that you've created more of something, and that dilutes the overall amount, which means that there's less value to each unit. I mean, that's a fact. But I do want to make that caveat, Craig, that I think people are more aware now of how this whole system is structured, favorable to the shorts, favorable to the banks, and unfavorable to the average investor out there. If you're not within the 1%, more or less, not that we can't make money ourselves, we do, but that I don't think the inflationary expectations will be as high initially. But later on, it will, in my view, filter into Main Street, which will make it at some point go similar to 2010 and 11, and perhaps, in my view, stronger. So I don't want to be contradictory. I'm just trying to lay the foundation that there's going to be, oh, we saw this before. Nothing's going to happen, really, blah, 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 blah. But we've got to remember what facts we're dealing with. And one is that the January CPI was 0.5%. Annualized, that's a 6% inflation rate. I don't want to make a big deal out of one day of trading. I never do. But nonetheless, I think there's a trend here with the tax policy that's been implemented in the U.S. and other factors which means at some point there is going to be inflation on the street that people really see. I mean, if you look at John Williams' shadow stats, we know we're probably at about 7-8% inflation, really. But no one really talks about that. And certainly from the powers that be, we get a very low inflation rate of just over 2%, which is their targeted goal. So now, since they've hit their goal, they have the excuse to raise interest rates. So what I'm saying in a nutshell is that don't expect any inflationary expectations to really take hold to the mainstream for a while. But at some point when it does, I think it'll compound and you'll start to see it in the mainstream press. They can't ignore it. And once that takes hold, you'll start to see a big rush back into the precious metals. But I think it's going to take some time.
Yeah, and there's $15 trillion of fiat currency that's been created in the 10 years since that could really rock the boat the next time that happens. So it'll, you know, you're right. We'll watch money velocity and those kind of indicators to see if, you know, as that gradually picks up. Hey, and the other question I think I wanted to ask you about was the story, I think it was last week, David, about cobalt users. Manufacturers that use cobalt saying, you know, screw this, we're just going to start going straight to the mines because this is so hard to come by. We've already seen palladium rocket higher. I just wonder if, I mean, is that, I don't know, is it, do you want, I guess I'd probably caution myself against reading too much into that, but in a sense though, isn't that interesting that that's one of the things we've always wondered about, if whether in the next tightness and run up in price, if silver users wouldn't begin to contract directly with the miners as well. What do you think of, are you watching that situation?
Yes, I'm well aware of the DRC using a blockchain or distributed ledger technology to put their cobalt into the marketplace. I think the Democratic Republic of Congo successfully setting a precedence here for others to at least contemplate doing it. Would it spill over in the silver market? And I think, yes, it will at some point. Whether it captures the majority of the market or not, I would hazard a guess at this point, no. But silver and all these commodities really are pretty scarce. So it doesn't take much of a fork in the road to take physical away from the paper players to perhaps cause a disruption in, let's say, their overall game plan. So, yeah, I like the idea a lot. I think it's great that it's a small market like cobalt that's essential, like silver being essential, and it looks like it's working fairly well. So I'm watching it pretty closely, actually.
Yeah, interesting development. All right, my friend, I want to transition to the questions that I had emailed to me for. I better get my rear end in gear and start asking you some of these things. The first one comes from Mikey, and he is noting, as we've certainly noted, and you see it across the internet, this J.P. Morgan hoard of silver in their COMEX vault, and how, you know, most everybody remembers the story. I mean, they didn't even have a vault in 2011. And then you had that short squeeze that was almost an extinction level event. And then the margin hikes and everything else that happened after that. And suddenly J.P. Morgan gets their, application, if you will, for a COMEX silver vault rushed through. And they begin accumulating silver. And we've watched the house account of J.P. Morgan stop silver contracts, you know, every 2 months. And so now they've got 135 million ounces. It's about 55% of the total silver vault for the COMEX is housed within the J.P. Morgan vaults. There's all kinds of theories about, you know, what are they doing? Could it even be just some SLV silver that they hold there? Because you could. It's in the prospectus that they can hold it in New York. Anyway, again, a long intro to what should have been a short question, David. What do you make of this? What's going on there?
Well, I'll give you my opinion. I want to caution everybody. It's my opinion.
That's all anybody has on this.
It's right. It's a thoughtful one, but doesn't make it right. So I love fact, as you know. So if you look at the spreadsheet from the CME, it will tell you what you just said, that J.P. Morgan has in their vault 592,475 ounces of 999 fine silver. However, 130 million of that is in the eligible category, which for all intents and purposes is just being stored for long-term investors. None of that eligible silver can be sold at this time until, or if and only if, there is a signature on the eligible moving it into a registered category that can be sold. Now, the argument, and you've made it yourself, Craig, is that, well, couldn't J.P. Morgan have some eligible silver? And the answer is yes, it could. But I doubt they would have 130 million ounces. Basically, that's a storage facility situation, and they're making money on that silver by storing it for investors. So of that 135 million, only 5 million ounces is held by JP Morgan in the registered category. And that's a fact as far as printed out by the CME. If you look at other entities like Scotia Macata, they've got 7.5 million that they own as Scotia Macata. If you look at HSBC, they have 10 million ounces of silver, which is double what the registered category for JP Morgan is. If you look at the Delaware Depository, which is almost all a depository, it really doesn't play in the futures market. They can, but of the 15 million they hold for clients, 14.6 million is eligible, meaning just being warehoused, and they get storage fees for that silver. And only 782,000 ounces is in their registered category. If you look at one of the biggest coin dealer slash bullion dealer wholesalers on the planet, CNT Depository Coins and Things, they're registered as 10 million ounces. And if you go all the way to Brinks, which facilitates probably more transfers day to day than any of these others, they're at 21 million ounces registered and only 11 million that's in storage or being held for investors. So now I'm sure the follow-up question, so I'll just anticipate it, is, well, what about, you know, one of the commentators, one of the best-known commentators in the silver market that says J.P. Morgan owns, I forget the number, 600 million ounces.
Like, yeah, and I don't know, crazy Uncle Ted.
I don't know. I really find it difficult to, first of all, if you do the arithmetic and you look at the amount of silver eagles that have been produced in the time frame, and you attribute all of it to J.P. Morgan or all of it to the equation equals X, all silver eagles were bought, it doesn't add up to that large a number. So that's number one. So that would make me question the number. Also, I find it very difficult to believe that someone would buy eagles that have gone through the whole process and smelted them back into bars. I find that right, almost unimaginable. I only have the facts I sent, you know, I'm talking about to verify what are the numbers. And in fact, I just got sent to me within the last couple of weeks, Investment Rarities, which is Jim Cook's dealership. And he puts out commentary every month from Ted and himself and others. And it talked about the 135 million we just discussed. And then it went on to say that Ted thought there was, you know, a lot more than this. And they always have a caveat at the top. This is Ted's opinion only. We don't necessarily agree with it. I don't want to make too light of it. I don't think that they hold much more than what's stated here, but I don't know. I can't prove it. But Ted can't prove it either. What I was aware of, kind of inadvertently, and I don't want to make this too long a story, but when I was at the Delaware Depository years ago, touring the whole thing by John Potts, the founder himself, when we got back to the tour, which took probably 3 hours, we went back to his main office. I met the VP, and the VP, told me that JP Morgan was putting a vault together in Hong Kong. That was the first I heard of it. So do I trust JP Morgan? Not at all. Do I believe all these numbers that are on the COMEX? Yes, I do. I think it'd be really stupid of any of these entities to falsify these numbers. Those are the only factual numbers I have. The other part of it, Craig, is simple common sense. The physical market will drive the price at some point. So think about how much silver was bought physically if and only if JP Morgan really did own 600 million ounces. That's a big demand in the physical market, yet the price has been going sideways to down mostly. So that doesn't add up either. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah. All right. Mikey has a follow-up question, and then I'm going to go to Chris's question because they deal with, I guess, specific entities, and you may have an opinion, you may not. You mentioned being in Australia, though. What do you think of this whole story down there with Novo and Artemis and the rest in the Pilbara region?
Don't know enough. I'm not a geologist. I know Eric likes it. I did not recommend it. We wrote about it because you almost had to. We recommended Kirkland Lake at about $6. And since Eric Sprott has gotten very enamored with the story and put a great deal of money into it. We have exposure by owning Kirkland Lake. I didn't want to put Novo on the list. So therefore, if it's a good thing and it happens, it will boost the share price of Kirkland. But if it fails, you're not going to get hurt too bad because Kirkland is undervalued if you take Novo out of the equation. So that's how I'm doing it. I'm satisfied with that. I've been burned too many times. I just don't know. It's a great story, but I don't like seeing stocks move on stories. I like to see them moving on drill results if it's that kind of a situation.
Yeah, and that's my primary way of owning it as well. I've got some direct Novo shares, but I've got just from talking to Eric over the last year, I started buying Kirkland at about six as well. And he's just so enamored with what they're doing and their drill results and how they've pared down their balance sheet and all that kind of stuff and the money they're making at $1,300 gold. So anyway, let me move on to Chris's then question. He's wondering about two specific companies. One is, and I don't know of either of these, it looks like MAG Silver. And the other one is called Exelon. You know anything about them?
Oh, yeah. So if you don't buy the Morgan Report and you're a serious investor, I suggest you do. But, you know, that's obviously flogging my own book, but I don't mind telling you that. We just did a full report on MAG this month, and the report will be published probably Saturday or Sunday when I'm on my flight to Toronto. I like it. It's getting into the buying range for us. It's not formally on the list, although it has been in the past. Exelon is a very long story. I haven't looked at it hard in a very long time. Exelon was one of the very few silver companies that was in the junior space that we liked early on. And actually, they had a silver debenture that you could buy and get paid in silver. And they did it. And some of my, you know, AIs, the mastermind group, bought into it. Of course, they received silver. And that was in the days of, I'm going to guess, $5, $6, $7 silver. I haven't looked at it in a while, so I really don't have any comment as of, you know, today's date on it. I know when Roger Brissetton was running the company, and he since retired, you know, it was a great company. I, again, have no further comment on it as of today. As far as MAG goes, I love it. As far as what's in the Morgan Report, I only hold one exploration company in the silver space right now, and I think over time, it will be twice as good as MAG. So if that doesn't get you excited, I don't know what else to say.
All right. Now, here's kind of a big picture question. And again, you can answer this however you'd like, in generalities or whatever. But Ted wanted to know if you could put your entire net worth, which we wouldn't encourage anybody to do, obviously. But if you could put your entire net worth into three separate things for the next 20 years, and not counting your house and that kind of stuff, what would those three things be?
Oh, boy. Well, totally off the top of my head. I think so. I don't know how broad a category I could use. I say one would be precious metals. So that cover myself with, you know, four precious metals. Secondly, would be in internet security. I don't have a company to name, so I'll just use broad generalities. I think the security issues surrounding the cryptos and the internet in general is a huge issue that very few are addressing. And the third one, I guess all basis of all wealth is from land. So I would say, you know, some type of land that nobody wants right now. So I'd pick something that's probably unloved and unliked at this point in time. So I'd go metals, land, and security for the internet.
I like it. I like it. That's a good answer. All right. To the questions that are piled up in queue, and there's a bunch of them. So, and again, if anybody wants to add to this, this is your opportunity to ask something of David directly. Just click the questions tab in your GoToWebinar control panel and type it in. First one's from Ron, who wants to know if you think the solar industry has become the largest user of physical silver, and if it's not them, which industry consumes more silver than them?
Off the top of my head, I think it is. I know it's in the 80 million ounces a year range. I don't think all of electronics is that big, so I'm going to say probably is. I hate to misinform anybody on anything you think I would know off the top of my head, but I absolutely have to look to be certain, but I think it is, yes.
All right, fair enough. All right, Curtis has kind of a... Let's call it a good topic of discussion for a day like today. He says, I understand supply and demand economics, but silver has simply defied logic for decades. will supply, physical supply, ever matter?
Yeah, boy. I'll tell you, even I start to question that premise. Yes, it does. I mean, if you look at what happened in the palladium market in the early 2000s when Ford Motor Company needed physical palladium to put in their supply chain for their catalytic converters when they switched from platinum to palladium, it took the market from roughly $200 or $300 up to $1,100. And that was purely based on physical demand. So would it happen or could it happen? I should say, could it happen? And so the answer is yes, it could. Let's just imagine that there is a battery technology that's five times superior to lithium ions and it involves silver. What would happen to the market at that point when every battery manufacturer out there from Apple to Samsung is out there vying for silver to put in their batteries? So I'd say it could happen, yes. And physical does at some point or can at some point take over the market.
All right. All right. Joseph has a question that I have an opinion on, but he's not asking me my opinion. He gets that on a daily basis. He's asking yours. He says, David, as someone trained in engineering, what is your take on the usefulness of technical analysis, given that just about all markets, in quotation marks these days, are manipulated?
I still think it's valid. I use it, but not with technician only. I mean, if you look at if you're on the, my service, when I do an update or an alert or a trade or whatever, I usually bring out the charts and show you how I use them. My methodology has gotten extremely simple. If you're new to technical work, I would suggest John Murphy, who's the founder of StockCharts.com. He's one of the best in the world. Let's say as a thought experiment, I was asked to be an expert witness in the silver manipulation, and I had to build the case. First thing I would do is I would get the jury to understand supply and demand, and that there's this fictional supply and demand in the paper markets. And then I show them a bunch of charts on the amount of volume of fictional silver that's sold and what it does to the price. So I'd actually be using technical analysis to prove the point that the silver price is manipulated. So I do think it has validity. I mean, that those washouts that happen in the markets are on the charts. So when you see these, 2 second trades that are just millions of ounces of gold or silver poured or dumped on the market, there's only one sole purpose to do that. It's a sell order. It's huge. It's going to drive the price down. So, and that can't be erased from the chart. So I think, Craig, even you've gone through, because you use them in your Twitter account all the time. So, yeah. The point is, I'll use where I muffed it recently. I'm very cautious, but the 1350 level for gold, which we hit recently, it was like a setup for a higher move. But if you think like a criminal, which I've done for years because I've known about the manipulation for a very long time, it's like, well, what would a criminal do? Well, they take the price down from there. That's what they do. And right. When I gave that out to my subscribers, my members, I got a couple comments from a couple guys like, how did you know? It's like, because right. You can expect the unexpected, especially with the silver market. Everything lined up to be a breakout when gold was 1350, but I say that's as high as it's going to go. And I forget where it went from there. I think it went down $100. I'm not talking about recent, Craig, the last month. I'm talking about, about 4 or 5 months ago. I have to look at a chart to get the exact date. But it does have validity as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And I should add, and there are people on my site that don't understand where I got my start. 8 years ago, the reason there was a Turd Ferguson back then is because we looked at the market, the gold market and the silver market, the way the banks do. And they know, that the tech funds that they're pillaging on a daily basis are primarily set up to follow technical signals like moving averages and stuff like that. And so when they blast an order, like you mentioned, they're usually trying to take out some moving average like the 200 day or the 50 day. We all understand that the markets are manipulated, but I would say, David, we're in the vast minority in that opinion, right?
Yeah, I know Canada doesn't believe it. And, I'm still friendly with Bill and Chris. Chris, I've never really argued with him because it's pointless. It took me a long time to get very good at it. I took a lot of courses and did a lot of work and made a lot of mistakes to get to the level of technical ability that I have. And it is a tool. It's not the only tool. It is not perfect. But I think if you ignore it, it's ridiculous. And to repeat what I said, to make the biggest point I could to get a jury to understand how silver is manipulated, I would be using technical work in a very basic manner about an uptrend, a downtrend, and what volume means in any market and why it can move the price so rapidly. And that's basic technical work.
Right. And so, and again,
I think on one further comment, not to put anyone down, but, you know, it's having an opinion is invalid in my view on most topics. In order to have an opinion, it should be a studied opinion. And people that haven't put in a year or two of work to understand and learn technical analysis, really, their opinion of it is invalid. So someone like Chris, who I think the world of, to comment about it doesn't work, and never really understanding or putting the kind of hard due diligence and study that I have and you have, really should reserve their comment on it. But most people go, oh, it doesn't work because so-and-so said it, so it doesn't work, without even understanding what technical analysis brings to the table.
Right. And the point I was driving at is that you and I may understand that. The people here on this website understand it. But we are like 0.1%, if that, of the entire investing world that understands it. And so if the other 99.99% of the people out there think that the prices discovered are real, and if they're setting their trading patterns based off of the charts and that kind of stuff, then it does matter. Okay, because nobody else understands that the markets are manipulated. You got to remember that we're in the distinct minority of understanding what's going on in the 21st century. Anyway, off my soapbox. Back to Ron, who had a little follow-up question for you. He said, how much will silver production decline after the declining exploration goals by mining companies? That doesn't make a lot. How much will silver production decline after declining exploration goals by mining companies? Does that make any sense to you? I think Ron might clear that one up.
But what he's asking, if you look at the Silver Manifesto, I'm pretty certain that peak gold has already occurred. I don't think peak silver has. The reason I say that is there's some big deposits that Pan American owns that are not developed yet. And this speculation that I am referring to in the Morgan Report, I won't give it for free. I work too hard to find these things. But it's probably, it could be, could not, would be twice as big as MAG. And MAG isn't at full production yet. So silver looks to me factually that it's probably got 2 or 3 years out ahead of us before we reach peak silver. So when will that happen? My guess is you'll see peak silver probably in 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Let's see.
Sorry, Craig, I got to interject. I have a presupposition that things are held together and, you know, all the funds are there and that, you know, the world doesn't fall apart, et cetera, and all these come into fruition. If they don't because of, you know, war efforts or whatever, then obviously I'd have to, you know, provide a different answer.
Yeah. Ron's kind of second part of that follow up question was, and we haven't really even talked about this. Are you paying much attention to the changes that could be facilitated by this? We call it the CUNY crude, the yuan denominated crude oil contract that's finally set to roll out in about 3 weeks.
Yeah, I'm reserving comment on that. I think you're a little better at that than I am. I have commented, I think, on our last interview together that I'm going to watch it carefully. I think initially it won't have much effect, but over time it certainly could. So I think the same thing that last time this question came up, and that is no real effective change for a while, probably like 6 months or so. But post 6 months, I would let the market tell me, but it certainly has the potential to disrupt it.
Yeah. All right. A question from James. I'll just tell you what he wrote, and then you and I can try to decipher it from there. He said he's a novice metals investor. He's new to precious metals. He's wondering why it seems the spot gold and silver prices don't correlate with the paper derivatives like GLD and SLV. And maybe that's management fees over time, you know, that the World Gold Council takes out of the GLD. I don't know. You have any thoughts on that?
No, that's exactly it. I mean, they're always be subpar to the spot price because there's fees involved and there's storage involved and all the stuff is in the prospectus. So if you want real, you know, I always teach, if you want to be a metals investor, I want you to invest in physical precious metals that you own and hold before you talk to me about ever leveraging through the mining sector or the resource space. So that holds as well. I mean, a lot of funds trade the GLD and the SLV because it's a mouse click and they have no interest in the physicality of the metal whatsoever at all.
Yeah. All right. Ted has Ted did join us. He emailed a question. Now he's got this actual question. And it has to do with really the short term between now and this Fed meeting in March, where everybody's expecting a rate hike. And I mean, how could that not already be priced in? But anyway, he said he watches SLB very closely. And I know he does. And he watches the options really closely, too. And he sends me some observations from time to time. And in his opinion, today's drop to 1523 in the SLB and then rebound back up signifies a bottom after the big beatdown. And then with this extreme bullish cot positioning, which maybe we can talk about too. But he knows that this is coming and that silver often is beat down ahead of Fed meetings and stuff like that. So at the end of the day, just your personal opinion, do you think maybe this was a bottom today, putting all those things together, or would you still stay cautious through the middle of the month?
Well, it could be, but I've adapted a trading method that works so well that, you know, I hate to brag because it's something that's pretty obvious when you think about it. And that is, let the market tell me. I don't want to tell the market anything. So saying it's a bottom, I'm
telling the market, hey, market. You mean the bottom's, the market's not going to listen to you if you tell it to go a certain way?
Exactly. So what I do is I look at the market at a good entry point, which based the COT is now. And then I make the market, how do I say this? I put a trade on that is market dependent. And so I'm giving you a free Morgan Report insight, and that's fine for your people. So I say, okay, I'm going to buy silver at a breakout above 17 on close only. And it has to maintain above 17 for 3 days. It's just the Morgan 3 day rule. And at that point, I'm long silver. Well, David, it's at 1644 right now. Ask in 1634. And the answer is, yep, but there's nothing to say it won't go to 1580. But if my buy is triggered on volume at the level I suggest, the market has to make that happen, not me. So in other words, I don't have to pick a bottom. What I have to do is wait for the market to come in my favor and then go along. And by doing that methodology, I win about 85% of the time.
Yeah.
Now, let's say that it does go to 1580 a month from now for a thought experiment. Well, what I might do is cancel that order at 17, basis spot, by the way, near month, and move it to, say, 1650. But I'd look at the chart to do that for various reasons, and I would explain it in the, you know, as a member, an inside member of the Morgan Report, premium member, paid member, you know, why I'm doing it and what we're looking for. But this eliminates a lot of, oh my God, this is the bottom. I mean, bottom picking is pretty much for amateurs. I've done it. I'm not that good at bottom picking. I'm very good at top picking so far, and I hope I don't lose my hot hand. I've picked every top in the market so far. And of course, when I pick the next one, Craig, I will be the most hated man on the internet, believe me, because there are so many silver bulls out there. And of course, I'll be called an Illuminati, a trader, an insider, God only knows. But all markets can get overvalued. And when silver gets overvalued, we should take some profits. And I'll probably never sell all of my silver, but I'm certainly going to sell some. If it's overvalued and there's opportunities that present themselves, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I think most everybody, if we're still in the sector after all these years, on the next rally, because it's going to happen, there'll be a lot of people treating it differently than they did in 2010-11, that's for sure. I forgot, I had one extra question emailed in, and then I've got three left in queue. And you're being very generous with your time, but I'll try to keep things moving. And again, if you have anything for David you want to ask, type it in under the questions tab on your GoToWebinar control panel. Back to the email question that I missed. This comes from Constantine, who says the next leg higher for the precious metals equities, assuming that, you know, gold and silver get back to their old levels of 1,526, maybe. What is the leverage of miners given the already massive returns that they've experienced from those 2006? Remember in 16, we got to 99, then went to 280 on the HUI, and now, God, we're all the way back to 170 or whatever. Do you think the miners still provide good leverage based on, you know, how they've trimmed up their balance sheet? And then which type of miner? You know, producer, explorer, royalty company, that kind of stuff, offers the best upside leverage should prices get moving higher.
Well, yes, I still believe in it. The rule of thumb is roughly 3-1. So if you get a 30% move in gold, you're going to get about 100% move in a good gold stock. It goes in a sequence. When the bull market starts to move substantially, what you'll see is the institutions and the smart money, the sophisticated money, will come in, and that will be in your top tier. We have the top tier in the Morgan Report. You'll be looking at your streamers like Royal Gold, Franco-Nevada, Wheaton Precious Metals, those type of situations, because that's the only place that big money can even move into, because there's so much money chasing. They couldn't put any of that type of funds into a junior explorer, for example. Then the next level will be the mid-tiers or the undervalued miners. And I'm talking miners generally. I mean, it'll be gold and silver primarily, but the whole resource sector will probably catch fire. And that will be companies that have expansion rooms or some exploration potential but are already producing. And then lastly, it'll be the speculative sector, that the general public will come in late to the market and they'll start bidding it up. And at the end of that cycle, it'll be the scammers, the promoters, and the charlatans will come in, and you'll see these massively well-done promotions for these penny stocks. And that's kind of a sign that the top is coming soon. And there'll be all kinds of stuff that looks similar to Bitcoin, where you'll see these massive moves in these stocks that go from like 10 cents to a dollar within a matter of 2 or 3 weeks. And that's a signal. So if you know how to play it, which I do, I'm not saying I'm going to do this. You know, I'm getting older and I only have so many hours in a day, but I own the URL silverspeculator.com. And I'm thinking about providing a service for the really aggressive type of accounts that want to play that final phase. A lot of this is outlined in my book. It's really written primarily by David Smith, called Second Chance. If you go to the website and go to the books tab and scroll down and buy the book, Second Chance, tells you a lot about how to do this. I think the book's $20. I mean, you won't spend $20 better. Excuse me, I'm harping my own book.
Okay.
That money is well spent. I mean, you know, I've got 40 years in the precious metals situation. I mean, I've been trading silver since I was very young and other commodities, of course, but primarily the metals. And so you could buy that book and it'll give you a lot more detail of what I just outlined verbally.
I'll put a link to that on this podcast page so everybody can check it out. Clark wants to know who your favorite low cost of production silver producer might be. And do you like Dolly Varden or Kootenay?
Kootenay I like fairly well. Dolly Varden, not particularly. Low cost. You know, I still stick to the top tier. I mean, basically, I trade AG quite a bit. It's fallen out of bed. We did a great analytical report in the previous month's issue. By the way, if you become a member, you get to look at the back issues, which are worth looking at, especially for fundamental analysis. So if you want to know why everything at First Majestic is accretive to the bottom line, you should read that report. It's several pages long. But, you know, if you're really serious about the mining industry like we are, then it'll give you a lot of food for thought. There's a 17% short position in AG right now. So obviously when the price starts to move up, a lot of shorts are going to have to cover, which will add buying pressure to the stock. So I guess I'll leave it there, Craig.
Okay. The second question from Clark, I just had to do with all of the states that are suddenly considering passing laws, reinstituting constitutional gold and silver as money. I guess Idaho just did this. What do you think will be the federal tax ramifications of making purchases in precious metal constitutional money? Got any thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, you know, from a purely theoretical / academic perspective, you really don't even need to pass it. I mean, the law has never changed about what a dollar is. So you really don't have to pass a law, but certainly it's been done. I was there when it was signed into law at Utah. I'm standing right, not the next guy next to the governor, but I'm about three over. There's a photograph I think I have in my file somewhere. Idaho. I think it'll be a state tax issue like Idaho has just done. And as far as the feds, it's pretty clear what it is right now. If you're a U.S. citizen and you sell, it's a 28% tax rate. So, it's pretty clear on the federal form what they state is required on a tax basis.
All right. Two questions to go. This is just a basic one we've kind of covered before, but just in a broad sense. John just wants to know what your favorite silver miner is. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I'll give you my favorite stock. The Morgan Report does all resources. I mean, we were first in the rare earth element space. We were very early on cobalt. We've been looking at vanadium, which I'll probably do a white paper on here in the next month or two. So my favorite silver stock, I'll kind of give you my favorite stock. My favorite stock is Franco-Nevada, which is a gold and oil royalty company. And the reason being is it pretty much performs as well as Warren Buffett. I'll give you a real quick story. I had a guy that never invested in the stock market in his life. And he joined the Morgan Report back when the price was lower than it is now, but we didn't provide as much in those days either. And so I talked to him on the phone and he went in and I forget how much he invested, but it was a modest amount, but it was all he had kind of a thing. And I told him, I'm not allowed to give you one stock. I'm doing this verbal, but if it were me, I'd just buy Franco. So he buys Franco. I think at the time it was about $30 a share. So, all prices go up and down on a daily basis. I mean, anyone that, doesn't know that shouldn't ever be in any market. So I started getting a daily email from him, Franco's down, like 57 cents, right? Well, on a $30 stock, think about that. I mean, it's nothing. And so it's going back and forth and back and forth. And so I called him back, which I don't normally do, but, I got a big heart and I don't want to hurt anyone. And so I called him and I said, I think maybe that, stock investing isn't for you. And gave him some reasons why, because, this is very low volatility compared to some of these other stocks. A lot of these speculations, which you do very few of, go to zero at times. I mean, you've got to be prepared mentally that this is part of the investing thing. If you're losing sleep over minor fluctuations in the price, you're just not ever going to be able to withstand stock investing, let alone precious metals that has one of the highest volatilities or betas in the industry. Well, Franco started to take off from there. So he made a pretty good whack of money. And so in those days, I had so few subscribers, I almost knew them all by name. So then a year goes by and I knew his name and I saw him renew. So I don't know if he's still with me or not. If I just forgotten his name. But that's my favorite. What I like to do, too, is when these things get overvalued is write covered calls. And I had guy that I met at one of the resource conferences. Actually, no, it was more of a generalist. It was a money show. And we struck it off quite well. So I had him on my mastermind and he used my portfolio as options writing, which is really the mid-tier and the top tier. You can't write options on these juniors. And right. It was a 44% return per year. The stocks did nothing. And that was an aggressive strategy, which means, Craig, that you write options every month going out 1 month. I prefer to do 3 to 6 months. I'm not lazy. It's just, I don't have time to do every month. I travel too much. But if you did it month to month where you get the highest premium, it was a 44% return, which astounded me because I've done a lot in the options market in the past. I don't do so much anymore. But normally on a good gold stock, you can yield about 17% a year, which is one heck of a lot better than what you're going to get in the T-bill or the T-bond. And it really doesn't take that much work. But we have a strategy for that, which I don't do. I've affiliated with this Gold and Silver for Life, and they teach you how to do it, and they're there for you, and they have the hotline, and, they do it all. And I don't have time, but some of my people have gone over there, and all of them, they're very happy. But you may or may not know, Craig, I know you know this. I'm talking to your audience, is that you never want to buy an option. I just use the word never, which you're never supposed to do. But you want to be an option seller, not an options buyer. The option seller makes profits 85% of the time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The market you want to be a bookie. There used to be a guy named Dave Kaplan that ran an outfit called Opportunities and Options. and it was in Ojai, California. And I had a pretty good size account there when I was, you know, trading for a living. And they had a booklet called Trading Like a Bookie. And the whole basis of that was what I just outlined, is that, you know, you want to be the house. You don't want to be the gambler. You want to be the casino. You don't want to be the better. And that's basically a strategy. Most people never learn that. And there's all these option guys out there all the time. I get them constantly. They want to rent my email list, which I don't allow. In a few cases I do, but very rarely. Because most of the people that understand or think they understand options become options buyers because the stock's going to move. Options are very difficult because not only do you have to be right, but you have to be right in a hurry. Whereas if you're the option seller, the decay rate is it's a gimme. And even if you get called out on a stock, which is a very, very conservative way to do it, you can buy the stock back. I've done that many times. It doesn't really
work. Yeah, that's right.
So you make a profit. So you get a guaranteed profit. And guess what, Craig? The profit isn't as big as it could have been. Well, did you ever hear that leave some for the next guy? Or I always sold too early, or any of those adages that we know in the, you know, in the investing world. Anyway, back to you.
Yeah. No, and it's funny. I use that same metaphor, if you will, analogy, whatever it is, about a week ago. Because we were talking about selling calls and being on the, basically, if you're the market maker in that sense, it's the writer of the option, even initially. I mean, you're basically the house. Yep. You are the casino. Okay. And then finally, just one last question within TA specifically. Ned just wants to know what you think of Elliott Wave theory.
Oh, wow. Great question. Let's see. How do I say this with the... with some discretion. So one of the best technicians that I know is Frank Barbera. Frank writes the Gold Stock Technician. He quit writing for years and now he's back and he, you know, we trade letters. He likes me and my work and vice versa. Frank's the most technical guy I know. Probably the second one would be Arch Crawford. And I also know Robert Prechter, not real well, but someone as smart as Frank has a different look at where gold is going via using Elliott Wave than Robert Prechter, who's the probably the god of the of Elliott Wave. So if it's the same basic, if it's the same thing, the Elliott Wave, and two stalwarts in the industry using the Elliott Wave come to different conclusions on where gold's going over the, you know, short, well, I would say short, over the intermediate to long term, that's baffling to me. And yet I do agree with the basic premise, because it's been proven to me from observation and experience that almost all markets have three basic waves up, or five overall waves, a leg up, a leg down, a leg up, a leg down. And then the last leg up, which is the third leg, you know, third bullish leg, which I'm anticipating for the precious metals over the next few years. So that part of it I agree with. So I hope I didn't confuse the answer. As far as do I look at Elliott Wave when I do my stuff, the answer is no. Do I read Frank's work and look at it? The thing about Elliott that I've never delved into really deeply, and I've done a lot in TA, is there always seem to be all these rules, but there are all these exceptions to the rules. You know, you get down into this triple III, you know, it's like, well, it broke down below this, but that's one that happens when the blah, 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 blah happens. And I'm like, well, really? You know, I like things very simple. And that's why I do like, look, if the silver market breaks this level, I'm long. And here's why.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, it's like, it's and I one of the best tutorials I ever had was from William O'Neill, the founder of Investors Business Daily. And believe it or not, William O'Neill beats the holy living crap out of Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett's known to be one of the best investors on the planet. And I'm not saying he isn't. All I'm saying is William O'Neill uses technical analysis and he does much better returns than Buffett does. But Buffett's got a different model and all that. I don't want to, I'm not trying to compare apples and oranges. It's just William O'Neill isn't very well known. So he taught the course back in those days. And it's all about certain levels and volume. So if silver broke out at my 17, which is where on the weekly chart, Craig probably know this, is where the weekly 250 cross. It's right at the same point, 17. So I told my people to use, I think I picked a number like 1689, basis of spot market, close only. I'm long. And so the market has to get there. Now, once a market gets there, I use the three-day rule. It's got to stay above that point 3 days in a row or I'm out. So usually I enter after on the third day, more or less. But in this case, I'll probably go ahead and let it trigger as an open order. But I also look at the volume. So if the volume is weak, I'll put a stop in. I'll let the market take me out because why? The market knows more than I do. But if the volume is strong, that's a really good indicator. And again, coming back to questions 5 or 6 or 7 ago, you know, how would you prove, you know, what would you do with TA to a courtroom proving similar manipulation? It's all about the volume. The only reason you're going to get the price of silver to fall, you know, 80 cents in one day is because the volume is so massively, unbelievably, excruciatingly high and doesn't even exist in reality. But it'll push the price down 80 cents in one day because the volume's so big. Or conversely, why did silver go up 80 cents in one day? And the reason is because the volume. I mean, look at what happened when silver went to that $48 level in 2011 at the end of April. I mean, the CFTC put on margin requirements that increased, and they did it 5 times before they could get the market to cool off.
Yeah, that's right. And they kind of helped out their friends when they did it. But anyway, that's a whole other story, I suppose. My friend, you have been extraordinarily generous with your time in providing all these answers today. It's almost been an hour, so I think we probably better just wrap up. But of course, before we go, I got to give you the final four. Remember, that's just 4 fun, quick questions.
You shoot them out.
Usually answer in a word or a sentence, and then we'll go. Okay, my friend, it is Lent. So old turd's got a lot of fish on his mind these days because of it. And you live up in the Pacific Northwest. What is your favorite fish?
Oh, geez. Salmon.
Ah, yeah. You know, I kind of like a little steelhead when I'm out that way, too.
A lot of people like it. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Now, again, I just mentioned you live in the Northwest. So living in that part of the country, which is a greater concern? The irradiated seawater of Fukushima, the San Andreas Fault breaking loose, wildfire like we saw in California, or that tsunami that everybody talks about from an offshore earthquake?
I think the seawater, Fukushima, I think it's underreported and is far worse than most people believe.
I remember talking to somebody once. I can't remember who it was. This was like back in 2000. This was like a year after that happened. And I can't remember who it was. But anyway, he had a Geiger counter. And he's like, here, I'm going to walk down. I'm right at the near the beach right now. Here's my Geiger counter. And it's going tick, 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 tick. That's not good. Exactly. Anyway. All right. The Oscars are coming up this weekend, David. Have you seen any of the 9 Oscar nominated films?
I'm sure I have, because that's one of the few vices I have left. I scoot off to the movie theater almost every month after I finish the Morgan Report to kind of do a brain drain. So I don't know what the 9 are. I don't care much about Hollywood per se, but I won't be a hypocrite. I do watch a lot of their movies.
So you might have seen like this 3 Billboards movie or the movie about Churchill. Dunkirk.
No, I haven't seen either one, and I want to see both of those, actually. But they're hard to find up here. Some of the more artsy movies, the Churchill movies, mainstream, that's available. I haven't seen it yet. The 3 Billboards one, though, I think there's only one theater up here that's showing that one.
And you got to see Dunkirk at some point. It's fabulous.
I've seen that. I like that one. Yeah.
Right, so there you go. All right. So lastly, as you mentioned, you got to head to the airport in a day or two to head up to Toronto for PDAC. I've never gone. What's your favorite thing about PDAC?
Oh, boy. Favorite thing is leaving.
That'll work.
It's huge. I mean, the first time I went there, because I'd been to a lot of retail shows and even, you know, more of the mainstream, you know, money shows and investing conferences. And some of these look pretty big. But when I got to PDAC the first time, my jaw dropped. Because when I first walked in there, I thought, oh, that's it. And it was huge. And then I realized that was 1 out of 5 floors. I mean, this thing just goes on and on and on and on. So definitely suggest you get there at some point, Craig. Everybody that's in our industry needs to go there at least once. But it's a rather draining experience for me. But it's also kind of exciting at the same time. But I'm getting older. I don't like flying. I don't like going to a place that's colder than where I'm at right now. And all those factors combined, I would say that my comment about leaving is probably my favorite part of it.
Well, hopefully you have fun in between and safe travels, my friend. And again, David Morgan, the editor, publisher, proprietor of the Morgan Report, author of great books like Silver Manifesto and the one called Second Chance that he mentioned. David, thank you so much. I really appreciate all you do. And thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, my pleasure. I hope I was helpful to everyone.
It was great. And again, everybody, thank you for listening. We'll talk to you again next Thursday.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.